such sights to show you.
Unofficial soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. All right. That's
I
cool.
mean, the
A little. And I noticed something that I want to talk about last night for the first time ever.
For the first time ever?
For the first time ever. And out of the, I don't know how many times I've seen this movie.
Oh, my wow. gosh.
That's yeah. good. That's good.
Okay.
All the right. first time, I was like, oh, get the fuck out of here.
Breaking new ground
a cool,
here.
A cool little Tarantino little.
A little
Tarantino-ism.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I hope it's what I'm thinking.
It may be, but I
hope it's what I'm thinking.
Well, shall we find out?
What I mean, I could just say it right now.
I'm recording.
What is it? What is
saying it right now? So, Pulp Fiction came out in what 94? 94.
Mm-hmm.
This movie came out in 96, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So when Seth leaves the hotel room before that lady gets brutally murdered,
yeah.
He comes back with burgers.
Yes, that's right.
The burger wrapping says Big
Kahuna Burger. Big Kahuna
Burger.
Yeah. That's right. I saw it. Yeah. I was like, why did I never
You're like,
notice
yeah.
that?
I love them.
Yeah. For the first time.
That's really cool. Yeah, that is cool. Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit. Tarantino.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that, guys, I mean, Tarantino, Big Kahuna Burgers, and then the bloody hotel scene. You know what we're talking about.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get started, shall
That's right.
we?
I would hope you know what we're talking about.
I mean, the name is on the title of press play, you know?
Independence Day 2 Resurgence?
No, no, God no.
Fuck!
Please don't. Tell him to go home.
Please don't invite me for that episode. I don't want that part of it.
Anthony's like, I don't live here, but you do.
Yeah, please.
Show some control. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Hey!
What the fuck
was
that?
They get worse and worse.
What the hell is your problem, man?
What the hell was that, soldier?
Joining us this week for pure absolute fucking chaos is Phil Ospino
yes!
and James Brizuela.
Hello! Hey. I was just here.
What's up? Hello! Good to be back.
Were here last week.
I was.
That's true.
Yes. It was one of those weeks where James just like slept in a cot in my closet.
Basically.
It's like daylight. Nope, shut it.
Nope. I fought the cats for that tree climb thing. Like, get out of my way. This is where I sleep.
You're all trying to eat like the food that they eat.
Come on, move, dude.
Well, thank you for having us. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure, as always.
So excited to have you guys for the 149th episode because Anthony and I can't count.
We both collectively were unable to count. We hyped this up last week with James, like, it's a big milestone for us, and it is. It is. Some people celebrate that 150th episode. Some people, yeah. I call that basic.
Yeah.
We are celebrating a huge 149th episode spectacular at the Horrible People's Podcast.
Woo!
Yeah,
I was pretty excited because I was part of the 100th episode, and I was like, cool, 150, that's awesome. Nope, 149.
Hey, no. Hell yeah, you were part of the 149th episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. Yes!
Woo!
After 149 Ooh. Episodes, guys, we fucking did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did an arbitrary number here. It was fucking amazing.
Totally arbitrary.
Sweet.
I mean,
Sweet.
Close enough. I mean, right?
Yeah.
In that case, I want to be part of the 213th.
Okay.
I would like 212, please, because I am one number above James.
Wouldn't that be believable?
No, because 12 would come out first.
Listen, math isn't our thing. It's just not our thing.
You guys, you guys
this
are
is why I'm a writer.
You guys are the Crusticans of mathematics,
oh,
right?
Jesus.
The Crusticans are back.
The Crusticans of math.
Listen to our episode last time these two were together. It was equally chaotic. But,
oh my god.
And of course, we are hearkening back again to 1996 with this one as well.
Yes.
And what movie is that, Webster?
We are covering From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh,
a frequently referenced movie on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I think the very first episode that Phil was on, it came
yeah.
up.
Yeah, I actually remember
right.
this.
And might I say, the creme de la creme of vampire movies. I just gotta throw that out there.
Oh, it's up.
It's up.
Oh,
like it's that. Up there with that plane.
It's up there
it
like
is,
that.
Elevated above the rest of the vampire schlock.
I hear it.
Last time we were here, there was literally like a chopper going.
No, same. Same
someone.
With us. Same with yeah. us. I think we were talking about H2O.
We were talking about UFOs.
Yes.
Freaking.
Fucking helicopters.
This is my life.
Yeah.
Every time I'm here, there's always a helicopter flying around, and that's saying a lot right there.
Anyway, so let's dive right into it, shall we?
Yes.
With a good old IMDb synopsis. I don't know which one of you elected to take that one.
I think it was me.
No, I'm doing that. You're doing the story.
Okay, go for it.
Anyway, here we go.
Go for it, James.
Two criminals and their hostages unknowingly seek temporary refuge in a truck stop populated by vampires with chaotic results.
Chaotic
results, huh? All right. Well, so From Dusk Till Dawn, story by Robert Kurtzman. Screenplay by none other than Mr. Quentin Tarantino.
Who?
This one dude. He's
had a few movies.
Yeah, he's really excited about.
Like a handful. Yeah.
Something like that.
And, a footful, you might say.
And is directed by our boy Robert Rodriguez.
That's right.
And James, who stars in this movie, man?
Oh, who's the cast right
here? I'm sorry, I'm listening at the foot comment.
There will be many more from me.
Starring Harvey Keitel, Mr. George Clooney, Quentin Tarantino himself, Juliet Lewis, Cheech Marin, Fred Williamson, Salma Hayek, and Tom Savini.
Also a woo right there. I'm gonna give Savini a woo right there, too. I love that guy. Anyways, all right, so our box office. Here we go. Box office info. Budget for this movie is 19 million smackaroos. And the release date was January 17th, 1996. And it grossed just 59.3 million smackaroos.
Oh, just 59.
That's a good return.
That's like a little bit more than quadruple their budget, right? We did this last time.
Don't push it, Phil. You're going
to
get her off on a thing. Just don't do it.
We did this last time.
You're already wrong.
Yeah, that's
okay. That's not...
It's not.
We did this last time, yeah.
So it's 19 million, 20 million times 4, that'd be 80.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Tune in for our H2O episode.
For more crappy math.
The season of crappy math, yes. I must say.
Yes, it is.
As evidenced by our 149th episode spectacular.
Yes! Woo!
We did it. All right.
I'm so glad I'm not sound editing this.
That's great. So... Okay.
That's rest good. In peace, my eardrums.
We
Christ Almighty
are going to have quite a bit of history here because we're going to go into a very fundamental era of the 90s. Okay. So let's just dive right in. Okay. So K&B is a name well known on this podcast, providing special effects for franchises like The Evil Dead and masks for Michael Myers, the effects make up for good old Frederick Krueger.
Who?
Frederick.
Yes, Frederick.
Frederick.
Krueger. Yeah, Frederick.
Don't put respect on this man's name.
Put all the respect on his name. Anyways, so
put some name over respect.
He's a pedophile, sir.
Only in later installments.
Put some respect on me, bitch.
Oh, bitch.
Because of such a pedigree, the team of Robert Kurtzman, Greg Nicotero, and Howard Berger were, naturally, they were very busy dudes. So Kurtzman, in particular, had a story idea he needed fleshed out. The story of two criminals and a few hostages finding their way into a bar ran by bloodthirsty vampires. So, I think a good premise.
Yeah.
So, the 24-page outline he developed gave a story overview as well as, insights on the characters. It was designed to be filmed on a very tiny baby budget, like a nano budget, taking place mostly in one location, of course, as hungry filmmakers are wanting to do. Now, Kurtzman, his original writing partner, John Esposito, he ended up getting a gig for, Stephen King.
Yeah.
Yeah, the movie The Graveyard Shift, which never seen it, so I don't know if it's good or not. So they were on the hunt for a young, up-and-coming writer to put the film together. Enter our boy, Quentin Tarantino.
Who? Again,
just a guy. Oh boy. The hand gestures
James
going on.
James just disappeared.
James, where'd you go?
I can't see him. I can see him. At the time, Mr. Tarantino.
He started it.
You played into it. You could have just stood there.
But you had to do it.
I had to.
At the time, Quentin Tarantino, he worked at a video store and had a few sample scripts under his belt. Some stuff known as, True Romance and Natural Born Killers.
Which?
It's just a couple other movies.
A
producer friend of Kurtzman saw these samples and felt the young video store clerk would actually be perfect for the job. So the team hired Quentin to write the now titled From Dusk Till Dawn for a whopping $1,500 and the promise of doing special effects for his eventual directorial debut, Reservoir Dogs. So pretty cheap.
Yeah.
But of course the deal was done, and Tarantino left his job at the video store and got to work on what he thought would be his big break. But of course, when he was done, a pretty big issue came up. Nobody wanted to buy this fucking movie, like, at all. And it was soon labeled, quote-unquote, unsellable. Mm. So, according to Kurtzman, quote, no one wanted to do it. They thought it was too vulgar and violent and didn't understand the turn from road picture to vampire film halfway through. End
gee,
quote.
I wonder why.
Well, I mean, maybe it has something to do with, like, the 3 minute, just, like, every other word being pussy, like.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the cavalcade of tits, or, you know, the just killing spree.
These all sound like selling points to me.
Yeah, it really does. I had a good time watching it when I was a child.
Cavalcade of tits is a great way to describe the
movie. I love it, yeah.
That should be the synopsis.
Oh, hello.
Were you in the drawer?
You
Alex, you keep your cats in a drawer?
When they're bad.
She was like, where's the tits? Where's the tits?
I saw that in the corner of my eye, and I was like, what the?
I thought it was the poltergeist again.
Well, no, because, like, I keep... Okay, so funny you mentioned that. I keep pushing that drawer in because I'm like, why does it keep, like what's going on? Why does this drawer keep, like, popping out? And turns out, I think that fucking cat is, like, pulling open the drawer and it's hiding behind it.
That's, like, her
takes
spot.
Takes a nap inside.
Oh, shit.
Wait, so you're telling me you don't keep your cats in drawers?
Why are the pancakes coming in the mail? More Simpsons reference. We gotta get one. We always gotta get one.
That was a good one. And that was a good one right there. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Brisnella?
Yeah, so anyway. During the writing process, Tarantino informed his friend, up-and-coming director Robert Rodriguez, that the script he was working on was set in Mexico. Naturally, the Mexican-American filmmaker had some notes, but loved the direction Tarantino was going in, and pledged to direct the film if his script ever got made.
Oh.
So, Robert Rodriguez developed a passion for filmmaking early on, as his father brought home an early VCR that came packaged with a video camera. This was young Robert's prized possession.
Oh, man.
I know.
How adorable.
I was like, oh, shit, he's got hands all over it. Listen, honey, I was trying to film our videos.
Yeah. He's like, this is actually true, because I've read Robert Rodriguez's book, Rebel Without a Crew, and he went into detail of how he used to edit videos with that VCR. I don't know how they would do it back then. I can only think of what, you know, what it was like back
then.
They
would, like, rewind.
But yeah.
It was probably like recording a mixtape on a cassette when you listen to the radio, and having to, like, keep going back and forth. Anyway.
Yeah.
You see kids.
Yeah, you see kids.
Oh, yeah.
We used to have these things called cassettes.
Physical media.
Physical.
His first real gig was filming football games at his Texas high school. He was fired because he shot the games in a cinematic style, following the ball, utilizing close-ups of the players and the crowd reactions, and generally missing the plays. Texas take football very, very seriously.
What?
Texans take football very
Texans
seriously.
Texans.
Texas take football real good, serious good.
Yeah. Yeah. You read Cardwell.
Texas takes football.
They take football very seriously.
Texas does take football very seriously. Overall as a state?
Yeah.
Like, thank you.
My dad's right. My dad is a Texan. I know.
Yeah. I don't know football.
No. Okay.
Yeah, and I played football. Actually, so I have a
one of my dads who was currently in Texas.
You gotta see these pictures, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
You play football for
I play football for years.
Like, American football.
Yes.
Like, shoulder pads and everything.
Yes.
Everybody grew bigger than me, and then I started playing track.
I gotta see these pictures.
I'll show you.
They're pretty great. Anyway, I gotta see these.
I'll slap them up eventually. But actually... So, me and Robert Rodriguez have something in common. I did the same shit. I used to have to film my brother's football games, and again, when I stopped playing, and I shot with close-ups and all this shit, and, like, the first day I came back, my dad was like, listen...
Yeah,
it just capture the play.
Yeah,
just capture the play.
One shot, one wide shot. Just give us a wide shot. That's it.
That's it. Yeah, and I was like...
No close-ups, no medium close-ups.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So,
anyways.
Wow. Nerd.
Mm-hmm. So... like Flynn, after high school, Robert Rodriguez went to the University of Texas, Austin. Texas Austin?
That's what that's yeah.
Like the University of
Texas,
California.
Austin, got it. Sorry. Awesome. I was like, wait, what? Anyway, But he didn't have a good enough grades to get into the film program, so he started a comic strip called Los Hooligans instead. While he was doing this, he also created his first short film, Bedhead, about a young woman who hates her brother's messy hair. It gained huge praise and even won some awards. It also was a showcase of a shooting style with quick cuts, zooms, and a lot of humor.
Pause for play.
Mm-hmm. A lot of helicopters.
Pause for that.
Pause for the LAPD. You know how he got financed for the Mariachi movie? He stayed at an institution for like...
Oh, you mean what?
Oh, is this
coming up? Oh, you mean what I'm about to read?
Oh, shit.
You fuck?
This is coming up, Phil.
Oh, wow, it is in the outline. Wow, damn.
Apparently he doesn't think you guys do your research.
I do this on the
show. He did this on a show.
It's an ongoing thing that I keep doing every time I hear.
Our fandoms align quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry, and I apologize again.
It's okay. What was the detail, James?
So this detail that Phil totally didn't know.
We're pausing for airplanes.
And we're back.
You want to see helicopters? I'll show you helicopters.
You want to hit? So, Robert Rodriguez received enough encouragement from peers at the time to get to work on what would become his big break, 1992's El Mariachi, mm-hmm. which was shot for a mere $7,000. He helped pay for it by participating in medical experience. Isn't that a cool fact, Phil?
Mm-hmm. It's a very, very cool fact.
Like, you've never heard before.
Totally new information.
Right now, right? At this moment?
Yeah. Whoever's editing this podcast, please cut that part out. We're pausing for helicopters here.
Helicopters?
Helicopters.
Cusacane.
Jeez, man.
Cusacane-flavored helicopters.
See, it flies like a plane, but when it gets down close, the propellers just transform out of it. Yeah.
Oh man. So his directorial debut.
Alex is just sitting here.
His directorial debut.
Directorial what?
Directorial debut was shot entirely in Spanish and intended for the Spanish language market, but was so good it ended up winning the audience award at Sundance and repacked for the US. That studios knew he could shoot, they gave him a far bigger budget to shoot the sequel to El Mariachi, Desperado.
Yeah.
Which starred Antonio Banderas and made Salma Hayek famous. Woo!
That's right, dude.
Can we get two claps and a woo for Salma Hayek?
Woo!
Thank you.
Yes.
Oh boy, that's gonna suck. Right?
Rodriguez's Rodriguez's rise to prominence in the film industry was quick. But because of his promise to Tarantino, his next big film was set, and K&B had a director for their vampire movie.
That's beautiful. Fucking right.
Beautiful.
Keep your goddamn promises, filmmakers.
So, chopped, shot, and scored. I always read the things. I don't know. I don't know if I'm supposed to, but I always do.
You're allowed to. It's okay. Right.
Beautiful, beautiful. So, K&B fulfilled its promise to Tarantino and did effects for the ear dismemberment. I hate you too. Dismemberment scene of his directorial debut, Reservoir Dogs. The film made huge waves in the 90s indie scene, being labeled as the greatest independent film of all time, quote unquote.
Okay, are we ever going to talk about Reservoir Dogs?
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about it right now.
I was going to say, like, can I get a quick, like, thoughts on Reservoir Dogs?
Get the thoughts out right now. Go for it.
Like, in general?
Well, because I saw it for the first time.
Oh.
What?
Oh.
Last?
See, that's James.
Last what? Yeah, that's James. I know. That was heat.
In April.
This year?
Earlier this year. What?
Yeah.
Remember, a different generation.
Right.
Well, also,
see, kids.
She wasn't born.
Yeah, true.
First off, yeah. Second off,
second off?
Second off. You have...
Hey, let me get a second off of that flavor of the pistachio, baby. Alex,
please,
Italian monster. Alex,
she's gone.
We lost.
We have now lost one host of the Horrible People's podcast.
She needs more booze.
She needs some help.
Italian monster, Alex. Hey, let me get a second off of that pistachio, baby.
Second off here. What the fuck is your problem?
Oh my god. Oh my god.
You had to drag me by, like, the scruff of my neck to watch a single Tarantino.
That's true, I did.
All right, so Reservoir Dogs, I mean, honestly, I like to throw the C word around in this podcast. It's an easy cinema, like, with the hand gesture and everything.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, because I'm not a giant fucking dork, it's a good movie.
Alex, what did you think?
I liked it.
Right?
Yeah. I also, I think this was during the weekend that my brother was, one of my younger brothers was staying with me, and he wanted to just watch, like, crime movies all weekend.
Oh, that's a crime, yeah, crime movie right there.
Crime, yeah.
So it was that. I showed him The Big Lebowski.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
That's good. That's good.
All 90s shit.
I know. Well, yeah. But also, that's one of my personal favorite movies of all time. So it was a good time.
Yeah. No, I agree. And Reservoir Dogs is, like, I think when... If you have a film nerd era, mm-hmm. Reservoir Dogs is like prime in the middle of that
it's
shit.
It's true. I was trying to set him up for his film nerd era.
Oh,
so.
It's
just like one of the best like heist movies.
Oh, absolutely.
Of all time, regardless of it being a Tarantino film.
And it's indie as fuck because they try to work around the budget by not showing actual the action, the heist, and stuff like that. So the indie vibes are definitely there for sure.
Yeah. There's like three locations. Yeah. There's like anytime literally, they run outside, the warehouse, and then like the cop scene.
Like the budget was like super small that they're like, Tarantino's like, how the fuck do we do that? Let's do three locations on that and let's fucking do it right there. Right? Just give me three fucking locations, Lawrence, and that's it, all right?
That was pretty good.
I'm done.
I liked it, Phil.
Thank you. I thought it was all right.
It's okay.
I'm working on it. There's two looks of disgust
right next to you. I am supporting this.
And it's fucking beautiful. I love it. I wouldn't have it. I'm glad you're here, Brizuela. I'm so glad you're here, man. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm just overjoyed I'm here, too. After that amazing impression.
Let's keep it going here.
Please.
I was
going to
say, I was like, let's just.
Yeah.
All right.
You wanted the break.
Let's reel it back real quick.
All right. So, how do you follow up the greatest independent film of all time? Well, call your film Pulp Fiction and influence an entire genre. As detailed in our Death Proof episode, Tarantino's sophomore effort was a complete game changer, and because of it, his name meant something.
Oh, yeah.
It meant something, you know?
I mean, it's its own genre, essentially, at this point.
He kind of is his own.
I have yet to finish Pulp Fiction.
Oh, my God.
Really? Interesting. Classic.
I started it, and I stopped, and then I just never finished it. I'll finish it one day.
Wow. Alex, you're a sick one in this episode.
We gotta screen it for Webster now. Okay. I'll slap it on the projector. I don't care, dude.
Are you mad, Brizuela?
I'm so mad.
You can actually pinpoint the moment when his heart breaks in half.
Yeah. Four Dogs or Pulp Fiction. Or she just watched
it. I mean, at least I've seen it. At least I've seen it.
Okay.
And he's Flynn is starting to get me to enjoy Quentin Tarantino.
That's true. I've had to gradually introduce her into the whole Tarantino verse.
Okay.
We're getting there.
Okay.
Baby steps. Moving on.
Now, the two had to fulfill their promises to K and B and each other by getting to work on From Dusk Till Dawn.
Woo.
In parentheses, though, they did this after collaborating on Four Rooms, which I fucking love.
That's a good one.
Four Rooms, to which each director filmed one segment. Have you watched Four Rooms? Yeah, you guys. Webster, when you get a chance,
sure.
It's kind of hard to find, but watch Four Rooms.
Mm-hmm. You haven't seen Four Rooms either? Oh man,
that's an obscure one though.
It kind of is.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's fucking fantastic.
It's
wild as hell, but it's good.
Fantastic.
It's an anthology.
Yeah, it is.
Tim Roth is amazing. Yeah, by
Tim
the way.
Roth is great.
I'm
sold.
Yeah, you have to see
it. And
that.
Robert Rodriguez's segment is the best one.
Oh.
It's the best
one. I will have to go with the Tarantino one. I fucking love that one a lot. Yeah.
They're close.
I have to go with the Robert Rodriguez
one. The Robert Rodriguez one is
I have to.
Antonio Banderas. You call it my kids a bend in the
That was good.
Do that again. I never do Tarantino ever again.
Well, let me tell you right now, Brizuela. No. All right.
Oh, well. God.
So, let's continue, shall we? So, audience,
please,
if you haven't seen Four Rooms, go see Four Rooms.
Yes.
No, seriously.
So, From Dusk Till Dawn was conceived with a whopping $1.5 million budget, but thanks to the star power of Rodriguez and Tarantino, as well as an access to some big-name actors... like Harvey Keitel, I'm assuming. The budget shot up to $19 million.
I was going to say him and George Clooney.
George Clooney.
Well,
yeah.
At this point...
We'll get into it. It's coming up.
So, Rodriguez decided to film with a non-union crew despite having such a gigantic budget. Dude, these days, a non-union crew with that's another conversation right there.
Oh, yeah.
Which was very unusual for Hollywood at the time. The cast would be stacked. Harvey Keitel would lead, having worked with Tarantino in Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. Juliette Lewis was also attached, having just worked on the Tarantino-written Natural Born Killers. Awesome.
She's so good.
I fucking love her.
I love Juliette Lewis.
And Tarantino would actually get a chance to act and live out his foot fetish with Selma Hayek for a brief spell. frequent collaborator, Mexican-American icon, Cheech Marin signed on as well.
Oh my gosh.
Mexican-American.
I know. Put her in night school, Spanish, she's going to be.
Mexican-American. I fucking love it. Man, oh boy. That's a natural gem right there.
Oh,
national,
yeah.
National. Natural. National gem. Yeah. Anyways.
Phil knows his words.
Yeah.
Second of all.
I've had some coffee and sushi today. Mm-hmm. So, Clooney only received $250,000 for his role, as he was known primarily as a TV guy, not a movie star. Though he did get to pick his tattoos. That's cool.
$250,000, that's it? Yeah. Holy.
That's not
he was not a star, dude. He was a TV actor.
He wasn't
actor.
A star yet.
See, but at that point, I thought he was because of ER.
He was known for off. But it was... He wasn't... Like,
right, he
a
wasn't
movie
a movie star yet.
Yeah.
Got it.
It wasn't like... You know.
A year after that, he would be
off
a movie
topic,
star with Batman and Robin.
This is off topic, but Dumb and Dumber, Jeff Daniels got something like $60,000
yes.
for that role, whereas Jim Carrey got like $8 million or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, he only got like $60,000 to be in Dumb and Dumber.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know
they
that.
They negotiate because... nobody knew Jim Carrey would be that big, and his two movies, The Mask and Ace Ventura, released right before that, made him famous, and they're like... Before you release this movie, we're going to renegotiate this goddamn salary because
yeah.
now you have a goddamn star.
Right,
this
right,
shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But anyway.
So, where was I? Okay, so
well,
he picked out his own tattoos, which is
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, you were also saying the year after this, George Clooney would be in a very great...
Only a year after From Dusk Till Dawn will Clooney become a movie star with a piece of cinema called Batman and Robin.
Yes!
What killed the dinosaurs?
The Ice Age!
Phil. Chill.
Oh, fat nipples.
That's right.
Fat nipples, yes. Oh, God.
Let's continue. All right, so he was picked after Antonio Banderas, Steve Buscemi, Robert De Niro, Jeff Goldblum, Michael Madsen, Tim Roth, Christopher Walken, and James Woods turned down the role. All
wow.
of these guys turned down that role.
Which is weird because James Woods went on to be in John Carpenter's Vampire.
Yes.
Which is
around
also
the same
fantastic.
Time.
Yeah.
It was around
yeah.
the same time,
yeah.
too.
Maybe that's what he turned it down for.
Well, they, from what I read, they all had scheduling conflicts.
Dude,
every single one of them.
Fuck?
Wow.
Except one. I forget who was... Oh, not on this list. John Travolta.
Wow.
Because he didn't want to be in a vampire movie.
There's vampires everywhere.
Dude, can you imagine Jeff?
Everybody be
bro,
cool.
So I didn't know that all these names turned down the role. I knew some of these people turned down the role.
James.
No, that was great. Everybody be cool. All right.
Somebody vampires. Sorry.
Somebody make some crosses.
Dude, I knew that Robert De Niro turned down the role, but I didn't
yeah.
know that Jeff Goldblum turned down the role.
Oh.
I didn't even know he was offered.
Can you imagine him?
Oh,
in that role?
Been fucking amazing.
No. It's like we got some vampires in this bar here.
Hey, maybe
dude,
be...
Christopher Walken. I didn't even know Christopher Walken was part of this.
Maybe we'll be killing innocent people, you know? Like, we're trying to get somewhere right now.
This is my kind of establishment.
Yeah, exactly.
a lot of strange folks around here.
Just so you know, none of us should ever do impressions.
Yeah, I know.
No.
That's very true. That's very true.
No.
I would like the role of somebody named Sex Machine.
Wow, there's like vampires.
Hey, you vampires. Oh, get her to sew that.
What's that?
Christopher Walken.
That was your Christopher Walken.
I don't know. I wasn't ready for it.
So what kind of pussy's available around
here? Hey, you be cool. You gotta be cool, baby.
Okay.
All right, let's go.
Bring it back in. I do have a legitimate question.
Yes.
If not for George Clooney, which one of these actors would you have liked to have seen?
Steve Buscemi, hands down.
As the
as
Steve Buscemi hands down for
George
me.
Clooney character
Seth Gecko.
I'm torn. Antonio Banderas or honestly James Woods.
Okay.
No, Goldblum. I take Goldblum.
Dude,
James
I think
Woods.
Michael Madsen could have done it too, man.
Oh yeah, I think Michael Madsen's too menacing.
I think
though.
No, I think
he's not as you know.
Yeah.
The only person I could see realistically playing Quentin Tarantino's brother is Tim Roth, and that is not an insult to Tim Roth, but more.
Yeah. Oh, Tim Roth would have killed it too, actually.
That's true.
They're all good choices.
Yeah, these are good choices.
These are fantastic choices.
I feel like
choices.
Tim Roth would have been able to have the menacing, like, ish.
Yeah.
You know? He could deliver the lines.
Like, exactly. I think deliver the De Niro lines. Is, like, kind of like an obvious choice because we already saw what he did with, like, with Cape Fear and stuff like that.
Sure.
Like,
oh, my
like,
God.
Yeah.
It's Counselor. Like,
yeah. So, I don't know.
Every time I go home, my mom, who is not a horror movie person, she's like, have you seen Cape Fear? I'm like,
yeah. Ooh, we could cover Cape Fear.
Yeah, Cape Fear would
that'd be a good one.
That would be good.
That'd be a good one.
Anyways, moving on. So, Selma Hayek's character was originally named Blonde Death, but based on her performance in Desperado, it was decided to make the character a Latina.
That's right.
She had to overcome her deathly fear of snakes for the role, as Madonna was waiting on the sidelines if Hayek couldn't perform.
She was. Madonna
That's
was just
so
yes.
crazy.
They were just like, listen, like if you can't do it, like Madonna's like ready to fucking she, go right, right now.
She'll dance with the snake. She'll make out with the snake.
Yeah, right. Yeah. For real. She's like, oh. Snake's like, oh God, get her away.
Like Madonna, it's venomous good.
Yeah. It's biting you.
So, to get over this, Hayek underwent hypnosis. What? To prepare for the role and hyped herself up for months in advance for the one scene.
Pretty sure she puts us all in hypnosis during that scene.
Of course. Absolutely. She has described it as one of her most challenging experiences as an actor.
I will also, I didn't put this detail in here, but it was not choreographed. Rob Rodriguez is like, dance. Just they're just like, let Salma Hayek do her thing, and that's all her
we
moves
were,
right there.
We were, what, 9 when that came out?
Yeah.
I watched it the year it came out, and at that moment, I realized, I was like, I am never going to be gay, because I love everything about this right now.
I mentioned
Salma
this.
Hayek, her and
dude,
Michelle
that
Pfeiffer's
scene.
Catwoman were the first things that made little Phil's, like, feel weird, you know?
Salma Hayek and Michelle Pfeiffer, you know, within a couple years together. Yes.
When we and watching it in the living room after it came out on video, whatever, with my mom, she was like, close your eyes. I'm like, Mom, there's like literally 30 minutes of tits. Like, what do you want me to do here? I can't watch the movie, Mom.
She's in a bikini the whole time.
And then everything
else. Everyone else is completely topless.
There's tits everywhere. What do you want?
Like, listen, there's actual like vampiric tits. Can I see normal tits to even this out? I don't want like something to develop here.
Yeah. Those ones are gross. They're all bleh.
No, I've said this like a bunch of times on this podcast. One of the earliest boners, Salma Hayek, in this fucking... That's it.
No,
you know,
I second that.
That just changed
the
game right
I
there.
I could go on a lifetime without knowing about your first boner.
Oh, I could keep going. There's episodes with documentation, James.
It's immortalized.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony's first boner.
Salma Hayek is our boner of the week.
Great lifetime achievement boner.
That is very true.
That's right.
She does get the lifetime achievement boner.
Yeah, absolutely. She really does.
She does.
There's no question. There's no question.
There's nobody saying move on this. We're like, how far can we dig into this?
Oh, no. I mean, I would just, you know.
What's funny is, like, that's, like, the woman, like, you know, the list that you give your significant other. And, like, you know.
Yeah.
And she's, like, my number one all time. So I was watching the movie earlier with my girlfriend. I was like, yeah, I got to prepare for the podcast. And so that scene comes on and she hits me already. I was like, what? I was like, I didn't even say anything.
Literally just watching a movie.
She's like, I'm looking at your jeans right now. You're like, good. This will benefit you later on.
I watched this movie far later in life than you guys. But when I watched it, it was, what was the phrasing I used? A bisexual clusterfuck.
Oh, well, there you go.
Beautiful.
You're like, anybody will be challenged by this.
Everyone.
Like,
I was watching this movie, I was just like, fuck.
No, seriously, I mean, it's kind of I'm glad that humanity can all, in unison, agree on one fucking thing.
Also,
Selma Hayek. Like, even Tom Savini is
I was gonna say,
really
even,
high.
Okay, the other
movie.
Thing about that, I was like 9 watching it, and I was like, I didn't understand it at the time, but I was like, I want to be a sex machine. Like, I want to grow up to be, that's who I want to be. I want to have a whip, I want to have a dick gun.
I'm gonna have
anyway.
A dick gun. Oh my
this
god.
This is going off the rails.
I knew we would talk about it. I knew we would talk
Dude,
about it.
Dude, we cannot go on this episode without talking about it.
Oh, no, it's going to come up later. Yeah. I know for a fact. Yeah. It's going
to
come up
There's
later.
So much about this movie to like, people.
That's why I kept the history part very short, because I knew it was going to take us fucking forever to get through it.
Like, if not Selma Hayek in, like, Next to Nothing, dancing with a snake, making, like, prolonged eye contact with the camera,
right.
Then it's George Clooney with neck tattoos and a gun speaking menacingly. Yeah. If it's not that, it's Tom Savini in a muscle t-shirt with a whip. Like, there's something.
I mean, and even, like, this is, like, you know, older but still younger Danny Trejo.
Yeah.
And when he takes his thing, he's, like, ripped. I was like, you know, I was like, damn.
Dude, if I saw that Danny Trejo in an alley, I would fucking shit myself.
I'd be like, oh, fuck.
He had these Goldberg traps. Dude, he did. Yeah. I'm like, who the fuck?
And let's not forget, three Cheech Marins.
Three.
There's three of them.
Not two.
Three.
But three.
A one. A two. A three.
Okay, but which one is your favorite?
Pussy.
Of course. Fucky.
By the way, I made a titty twister joke at Jim's expense. Remember, like, a couple weeks ago in the thread? He said,
I can't remember.
What did he called? Oh, Starship Stripper.
Oh, yeah!
So I cropped out one of the bugs from Starship Troopers and I put it in front of the titty twister.
That's right.
And I said,
loser, we got bug pussy.
Yeah, we got bug pussy. We got sprayer pussy.
Insect pussy. If you don't got what you got, then fuck you.
Oh, you guys are going to love the questions coming up. Oh,
beautiful.
The correct answer is Chet Pussy.
Chet Pussy. That's
and
right.
And that's the only answer.
That's it.
Because otherwise it's Border Patrol Man and Man at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking for my friend Sam! At the door. He's like knocking on the door. Like, he's like, I'm looking for my friend Sam!
I don't know why earlier too, I was watching. He's just like, you want a cold beer?
Like, after all that, I'm an American.
He's like, Mexican and domestic. Like, that's gonna solve everything.
My brother is dead.
He's like, damn, you look like shit.
It's like, this girl just lost her whole fucking family, dude. And you're giving me options on what kind of beer I want?
We've got him in the car.
All right, should we keep going?
Yeah, right. We have, like, literally two more lines.
Yeah, seriously. All right,
we can
so,
try.
The first 5 weeks of shooting, we're on a sound stage in L.A., which was fairly error-free.
Oh, thank God. Not like this podcast.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, but then they had to go to Barstow for the exterior scenes of the titty twister. You know, I always wonder where they shot that. So
I was
going to
ask that, too.
Fucking Barstow.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Sandstorms disrupted the set pretty frequently, as well as rain, which made it difficult to match shots they had finished earlier. The biggest problem came when they filmed the explosion of the titty twister bar. It worked too well.
Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, all right. The fire from the explosion was far bigger than any of the crew planned for, as they still had scenes to shoot after. Part of the set had to be rebuilt when the fire finally wrapped up. That's interesting.
They're all, shit.
Because I was watching this last night, and I know the explosion, I'm assuming at the very end, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was noticing that, too. So as soon as they opened the door, like, continuity-wise, the explosion was a whole bunch of vampire. You'd expect to see, like, guts and blood, mm-hmm. and then the next shot is just big ball of flame just coming out. Like, how did that happen?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, when they're staking them, they catch on fire, too.
I guess.
So you kind of have to, like...
I just thought it was pretty funny. I was like, all right, I was expecting, like, blood, guts, and shit, but out of nowhere, we just see this Michael Bay fucking, like, explosion.
Yeah, they did not plan for it to be that big. Yeah. They did not.
That's cool, though. That's really
interesting. By the way, George Clooney's weapon is practically the most... stupid, non-practical weapon in vampire movie history.
It's like a big jackhammer stick.
Yeah, and then it's like when he's doing, like, he's killing one vampire, like, there's 50 behind you.
It's the slowest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
They're waiting their turn like a fucking, like... Yeah.
They're just waiting, they're like, okay, what's... Yeah, never mind, we'll get into that.
We'll get to it.
We'll get to it.
So, interesting piece of information. Did I ever tell you guys that my dad actually come out in a Cheech and Chong movie?
Oh, yeah, you showed me
like,
the scene.
I've actually, like, so back in, like, the 80s, my dad was living in East L.A. with his cousin, and he used to work the night shift, and he would come home, like, around 7, 8 in the morning, so he was walking to his neighborhood, and they closed down his entire neighborhood.
Okay.
And there's security right there, like, oh, hang on, dude, we're shooting something. He was like, wow, what the fuck, dude? My dad's like, I'm fucking tired, dude, my house is right there, let me just go right through. And he gets on a walkie-talkie, there's a civilian going, he's like, yeah, let him go, dude, fuck it. And then he ends up being... So you see Cheech and Chong in a white lowrider fucking bed. You see my dad, like 25-year-old dad, with a leather jacket, mustache, and his fucking lunch pail, just walking, and he's like super skinny too. He looks like one of the guys from the Ramones, because he had like this fucking hair.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he's like in the final shot of a Cheech and Chong. I think he was up in smoke.
I was getting... Yeah. That's... Wow.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
pretty awesome.
I think I should show you guys.
Yeah, he's just like casually walking out.
He's just walking right there. I'm like, holy shit, my dad, that's like... He's like, yeah, he's been telling me this story for years. And he's like, yeah, your dad's come out of a movie. And
that's fucking crazy.
I tell you, my buddy's dad was the first vampire that Blade kills in the club scene.
Oh, that's badass.
Yeah, like that's he was an extra in like a bunch of movies, but he's that's like, yeah, that's cool. Me right there. I was like, oh, fuck.
That's fucking cool.
I'll never forget. So my grandma was a huge stoner.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mainly because she had cancer.
Oh, hell no.
But and also she had polio when she was younger, so she was just super sick for a lot of her life. But anyway, when I was younger, I found a VHS of Up in Smoke.
Oh,
and nice. I was just like... What's this? As like a 6-year-old. And they were just, and my mom was just like, you can't watch that. And I was like, what is it? And they're like, it's for adults. And, and I was like, okay.
Whereas I would have been like, what is this? My mom would have been like, put it on.
I would have been like, I want to watch it Up in Smoke. My dad's like, put it fucking, yeah, put it on.
Yeah, put it on.
I want to watch it too.
He's like, I want to watch it, yeah.
Put it on.
No, my mom was a lot more sheltering of me as a kid. Like, she knew exactly what it was. I'm sure she would have liked to have watched it too, but she was just like...
There's absolutely no sheltering in my
house. Well, that's the thing, though. Like, I'm going to bring this up later on, some of our questions, but as... Mexican children growing up.
Yeah, sure.
We just watched Mexican media.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it was. So, Cheech and Chong, Desperado, like, anything. If a Latino director or, like, creative work behind it, my mom was like, put it on. I don't care. It's fucking violent.
I remember during the Desperado era, during, like, the Selma-Hayek Renaissance, mm-hmm. like, the upbringing, everybody, my tias, my mom, everybody hated on Selma-Hayek because she was super hot.
Oh.
And, like, so, like, my tias was like, oh, she's probably from, like, a rich family or something. Mm-hmm. Fuck her. Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the men are family was like, no, fuck you. You're fucking wrong.
Well, my mom loved her because she was like, look, she's not got the pale skin like I do. Like she was very like, dude, nah, that's no, my family, that's one of ours.
The women on my family were haters. They were just haters because like she was like mega hot and all the men were like drooling about her. And we're just like, you guys are just haters. Just hating. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all you guys are. And, but yeah, I do specifically remember that.
Shall we?
I was going to say, like, wait, I can start anytime.
Go for it. Let's do it.
Keep it going.
All right, so now that this movie has been made,
right?
They had to distribute this bitch.
That's right.
So, From Dusk Till Dawn had a lot of graphic violence that surprisingly didn't conflict too much with our friends at the MPAA. However, it was severely cut abroad.
That's right.
The film was outright banned in Ireland. And 3 different cuts exist for various countries. One of them with up to 20 minutes cut from the final product.
Jesus.
The Irish are too Catholic. They're like, nope.
I think with the crosses, that might have crossed the line.
Right. Yeah. They were vanquishing evil.
I think there was some borderline sacrilegion.
A little bit. No.
The Shooter McGavin? No.
You're so defensive. You're just like, no.
No.
So critics were rather mixed on the movie, with many finding the violence to be pretty over the top, as well as criticizing the tone shift.
Boo.
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 Our boy, Roger Ebert, sums it up best in an overall pretty positive 3-star review, saying, quote, From Dusk Till Dawn is a skillful meat and potatoes action extravaganza with some added neat touches, quote, unquote. And, quote, the good things in the movie, especially some of the dialogue, are so much better than the rest that you wish Rodriguez and Tarantino had tried to triumph over this material instead of merely delivering it. It's a pro job, but these guys can do better, unquote.
Yeah, see, so he gives it a very positive, like, 3 out of 4 star review, right?
Right.
He, in his mind during the time, during the whole review, is like, listen, like, this could have been a 4-star movie.
Yeah.
His whole thing was just like... They were so close. But at the same time, I think he missed the boat on this one.
Yeah.
I don't think that's fair. I mean, that reads is like, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Right. Yeah. But like, he knows the talents on board. He's like, this could have been a goddamn masterpiece. I personally think it's a masterpiece. But yeah, that's his take on it.
Right.
Critic Jay Carr from the Boston Globe was equally mixed, saying, quote, From Dusk Till Dawn answers the question about George Clooney, but raises a couple about Quentin Tarantino.
A couple?
Just a couple?
Yeah, right?
I would say a pair, you know?
Go good. That was good.
That was good.
Audiences, in another defiance of critics, were very much not mixed, making the Tarantino and Rodriguez collaboration number one in its opening weekend. Yes, a horror film released in January opened at number one.
Beautiful. Yeah, you couldn't stop these two in the 90s. I'm sorry. Yeah. It was impossible.
Oh, no. The film would eventually gross $25,836,616 in the United States and $33,500,000 internationally for a worldwide gross of $59,336,616.
Dude, that's some fucking reading right there.
Fucking Webster, that's
God
really
damn,
that's
I know, dude. Impressive. I just throw her in there sometimes. Yeah. I don't know. She
I'm
just
gonna
does
give
it.
You that George Clinton. That's why I call a fucking show. That's right there. Webster's reading right there.
Yay, nice. Numbers. Anyway, well, a huge success in theaters, it became huge on home video as well, particularly in the entertainment shelves of Mexican-American families because, well, Robert Rodriguez. Yeah.
That's right.
That's right. That's right. That's a crack crisis.
Almost killed Anthony.
Close.
So, speaking of, how about we look at some Letterboxd reviews from folks who probably grew up on this one on their video shelves as well.
Mm-hmm. That us.
That be us. Yes.
That be us.
Mm-hmm. From Dusk Till Dawn has a 3.5 rating out of 8,600 reviews. So,
could have a little more, but a high rating. So I'll take it.
Nakul.
I follow him on Twitter. He's really cool.
Oh, okay.
Nakul.
Gives the film 3.5 out of 5 stars, calling it a grindhouse double feature, and concluding his review saying, quote, "Look, I'm not saying I back Tarantino for writing a scene into a movie where Hayek stuck her feet into his mouth. All I'm saying is I understand."
That's good.
You know, I had that same thought. Like, I'm like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. I mean,
if that's your thing, and just whatever, man.
Even if it's not your thing, like, fuck it, whatever.
Didn't you recently beat around the bush with the whole foot fetish thing recently? Like, there was, like, a publication that asked him, what's up with your foot fetish? He's like, that's just good directing. He just says it's just good directing. He said something like recently.
They forgot the whole time. He was like, that's just good directing. Yeah, like, he's winking the whole time.
Yeah.
Mr. Tarantino, put your shoes back on.
It's not his feet, it's other people's feet, please. Anyway, Cal gives it 4.5 stars, saying, quote, "If you look like Quentin Tarantino and your brother looks like George Clooney, you probably lost the genetic lottery." Unquote.
That's fucked up. But funny.
I mean,
honestly, like, how old is Quentin Tarantino in, like, in 90s?
30s? He's 30s.
He's in his 30s.
Because he was 27 when we did Reservoir Dogs. Yeah, so he's early 30s.
He's probably early 30s. He's probably around our age right now.
Yeah, I mean, he was fairly young in this movie. I wouldn't say he was bad looking, but in comparison to Quentin Tarantino, I was like, okay, genetic
first. Yeah. George Clooney, yeah.
So, okay, Brian Espita gave the film 4.5 stars, saying, quote, "Tom Savini's cock gun is the single greatest movie prop of all time."
I reiterate, when I was a kid, I wanted to be him.
Cock gun.
I didn't understand why at the time, but I was like, this is great.
Cock gun and Salma Hayek in one movie, Little James, just like, put it back on.
Put it back on.
I know, I just finished it. Put it back on again. Rewind.
And I legit watched this movie, I don't know how many times I've seen it.
No, I agree. Same.
No, the first time when he's just like leaning back, and all of a sudden it's just like dick gun. Yep.
Yeah.
Like,
he looks at him and he's like,
I like how it's also, I noticed this too, it's the same clip just reversed when he closes it. It's the same clip when he closes.
They
roll
back.
They just rewind the clip when it closes right back on. Editing magic, baby. That's it.
Oh, boy.
And finally, Christina gives the film 3.5 stars, saying, quote, "Didn't anticipate seeing Quentin Tarantino play a paranoid toe-sucking sex offender who also turns into a monster vampire and tries to kill George Clooney. But hey, it was fun." Unquote.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a sentence. All right.
That was a long sentence, but it is the movie.
Yeah.
A paranoid toe-sucking sex offender. That is his character.
No, I gotta praise that one scene where George Clooney comes back to the hotel room, and we're still, it's like a medium, like, torso shot of George Clooney, and he's just like, the look on George Clooney's face is,
and
like,
you get the,
what is wrong
the
with
flashes,
you? And the little
flash.
One little frame
when
of, like, the blood. Yeah.
To the actual
I love
scene.
That part. I was like, dude, I forgot how good this, that's like,
that's what makes it scary.
That's the one part of the movie where I'm just like, oh, shit. Like, all the vampire stuff was like, oh, that's fun, but that scene kind of
like, I was like, oh, fuck. I remember watching that as a kid, and I was like, what happened? And then, like, you see the actual shot, you see blood on the wall, and I'm like, get out of the way, George Clooney. I'm trying to see the fucking, trying to see the fucking massacre that he just did.
That's just good filmmaking right there.
Yeah, no, that really was good. That's really good.
That's just good filmmaking.
That is good.
That was good. Anyway, From Dusk Till Dawn was a huge success, as previously mentioned, spawning a franchise of straight-to-DVD sequels, a video game, and even a short-lived TV show. The follow-ups couldn't match the success of the original, but the film itself remains a time capsule of the insanity that was the mid-90s.
That's fucking right.
There was a video game?
There was, apparently. It's like a PC game.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember that either.
Yeah. But I mean...
And if you guys don't know about it, then... It might as well not exist.
Well, that's From Dusk Till Dawn. We made it.
All right, we did it.
Yay! That was one of my shorter outlines. It still took us how long?
Well, if you don't mind me, I'm going to...
50 minutes.
50 minutes, good.
Another one for this discussion.
That's not bad.
No. Yeah. Honestly, I was expecting... I mean, depending on how long the discussion takes us, this could take us into 2 hours. Who knows?
I don't mind. I think for our 149th episode, it fucking deserves it.
Woo! God damn it, Anthony.
Yeah, 149.
Beautiful, beautiful.
With everything done, so what are your thoughts on From Dusk Till Dawn? And you know what? Since we already know how we're praising it, who's your favorite character? So I'm gonna run to Phil because he's right in front of me.
Oh fuck!
You start it up. You start it up.
Well, let me just say this: From Dusk Till Dawn, more like From Dusk Till Cinema. Shit.
God damn it. Okay. Boy, that was...
That was good. That was pretty good, huh?
It was one of those, pretty good. You didn't hurt yourself on that stretch.
I mean, you wanted my thoughts on From Dusk Till Dawn.
Please.
You know we've been holding that the whole time.
I'm just going to chuck
this now. My favorite character. Shit. Dude, I mean, where to begin? I mean, shit. I mean, I would say Tom Savini, Sex Machine.
Oh, yeah.
He's fucking awesome. He's got the fucking iconic cock gun, you know? Like,
I mean, he's a badass.
I mean, what more? I mean, I'm trying to think of somebody else besides him.
Mm-hmm.
Shit, it's Pussy, you fucking...
Yeah, Chet Pussy.
Chet Pussy, he's great too.
I mean, there's a lot to pick from.
There's some good characters.
There's a good selection.
But how do you feel about... What's your history with this movie? Give us
some... So, like you guys, I've also watched it at a young age. I remember my dad renting it on VHS. Mm-hmm. We watched it. I fucking loved it. I didn't know who Tarantino was at the time or Robert Rodriguez. I just thought it was a really fucking cool movie.
Yeah.
Later on in life, as I got into teenagehood, you know, I started getting into Tarantino. And I'm like, oh, shit, From Dusk Till Dawn, they did that? Oh, okay, cool. And then I'm like, oh, that fucking guy directed Desperado. And Desperado and From Dusk Till Dawn were like the movies that we're all watching. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, From Dusk Till Dawn, for some reason, my parents let me watch it too. I mean, us Mexican families, they let us watch anything.
I mean, honestly, it was a double feature with Desperado for us. Like, every fucking time.
Yeah, I remember that too. I frequently remember watching Desperado a lot and From Dusk Till Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's fucking great. I love it. You can never go wrong, especially during this time of the year. And I fucking recommend it to anybody who's ever watched it.
It's... I mean, James, your thoughts on this one before I...
What? I hate the movie. no, I mean, From Dusk Till Dawn, it's iconic for me. As just one of those movies I watched when I was a kid, way too young, and just fell in love with for many, many reasons.
Oh, well, we detailed the reasons, James.
Yeah. I think also, too, because I think it's just one of my all-time favorite vampire movies because there's no, like... questioning the morality of the vampire or like the eternal living situation or none of that. It's like they want to fucking kill everybody. They're gonna eat everybody.
Wait. Yeah. You mean to say you don't love Twilight?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
Never heard of her. I love this movie. Favorite character? I don't know, man. I've always been even though I love Sex Machine. I said that I wanted to be him when I was a kid. Frost is probably one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
Because he's just that cool, like, Vietnam vet.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he just gets...
When he smokes a cigar, it's so fucking cool.
When he rips the heart out, and then, like, Sex Machine comes over with the pencil and just goes... That's, like, one of my favorite moments.
No, for me, it's the scene when he's monologuing about, like, his, like, trauma.
Yeah.
And, like, in the background, Tom Savini's,
so he's, like, slowly changing into a vampire.
And then on the background, you just see Frost just being like, and then I can't.
Yeah, he's like, one,
And the thing is, everyone is invested in his story too. Like even George Clooney, Harvey Keitel is like just focusing on his story.
I don't know that it was scripted, but also one of my other favorite lines from Sex Machine, because it's so obscure and just quick, is when the vampire lady like jumps out and he goes, "Oh shit!"
I remember that,
and it's like such a reactive comment that anybody would say like in a normal situation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's being filmed, so I don't know if he did that like, you know, ad lib or, you know, whatever. But I love that.
Do you remember, like, this is pretty recent, when Tom Savini got hit by a car?
Well, he got hit by a car?
This is recent. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
I didn't know about this. Either.
Okay. Well, no. I stay up to date on horror.
Nice.
No, this man was riding a bike. He got hit by a car. And he lived.
Oh, well, dude, have you seen how fucking ripped Tom Savini is?
This man is ripped. He is
for like 70 something, dude?
Yeah.
He's still buff?
He's like Trejo buff.
Yeah.
Like, he's fucking up there. It is insane.
Yeah, he's 74. He's ripped as fuck, and he did get, and yeah, he got hit by
I mean, if anybody's gonna survive getting hit by a car, it's like horror savant.
Yeah. Bitch, I know gore, dude. You did shit to me. You did shit. True.
No, yeah, like, he posted, like, photos on Twitter, but, like, yeah, he was, like, fucked up, and I was like,
dang.
When I find the person.
Responsible.
Mm-hmm. It is
awesome. How dare you hit Tom Savini?
That's when Dick Gunn comes out again.
Dick Gunn lives.
All right, so, like, we talk about a lot of things. I just want to put this out. I brought it up here on YouTube just for our viewing pleasure. It's literally, like, a few seconds long. But this is one of my favorite scenes from the entire movie. And I'm just going to play it really fast.
Oh, the old guy?
Oh, I was like, fuck me, I guess.
He's like,
I just love that old clerk. What the hell do you want?
Like, what do you think I want? You old decrepit bastard. I want a room.
See, for me, it's the line that George Clooney said.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, I've always liked that clerk because I used to do that a lot in high school. I used to walk around like, what the hell do you want? And when nobody would understand. And I'm like, fuck, nobody watches From Dusk Till Dawn here. All right.
Webster, your thoughts on the movie? Favorite character?
Oh, are you
character?
Saving yours for last?
I mean, like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, sure, go for it.
Typical
that makes sense. What a guy.
I'm
going to lean to the next question, but it's going to be similar thoughts to yours. That's why I'm like, let's break it up.
Okay. So I briefly mentioned this earlier. So one of my dads, he introduced me to this movie when I was, I want to say like my first year in college.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you want to see a cool movie? And I was like, sure, why not?
Yeah.
And so he slapped this on and I was just like, okay. And then the vampires showed up and Selma Hayek showed up and I was just like,
oh.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And it was like super late, so I didn't get to finish it all the first time, but I was just like, what the fuck?
And it's crazy too, because like as a kid, when I first saw that, I was like, oh, it's just like one of Dad's crime movies. Like, I don't care at the time. Yeah. My dad was like all about Heat at the time. I was like, oh, it's probably like another Heat. And then the vampire shit goes down. I'm like, oh shit. You had my curiosity, but now you got
my attention. And he was just like, just wait for it. And I was just like, okay.
It's that major twist that what makes this movie such a unique icon, I guess.
Well, right.
I remember, honestly, this was such an easy watch for me. Like, I remember the first time I watched it. Shut up. I remember the first time watching it being like, this is like seven movies, and I'm like, okay, it's two max.
Yeah.
But also, like, I really was expecting it to feel longer, but I was like, this could be so much longer, and I would be fine with it. As for favorite characters, Seth Gecko. Hello.
And Selma Hayek's feet.
Selma Hayek's feet. I mean, sure, they're great, but it's not Seth Gecko. It's not George Clooney with a neck tattoo, please.
Oh boy.
I gotta put an honorable mention.
Yes.
Character out for freaking Pete Bottoms.
Which one was Pete Bottoms?
The liquor store guy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I forgot how good he was.
This poor bastard. Quentin Tarantino's like paranoid ass is just like, he was giving him signals. He's like, so, I wasn't giving any signals.
Every single time since the first time I ever watched it, it always makes me laugh when they show the file photo of him and it's him holding the fucking
and it's I was so watching that last night. I was watching it last night and I was dying. I was like, dude, what's up with the fucking photo holding the goddamn fish?
Like they show the sheriff and it's like a normal photo and he's like, yeah. Oh, well, that's the photo they show.
I wonder if it's real. Like, hey, you want to use this for
the probably. They're like, hey, do you have a photo of you doing leisure activities?
It makes me think, like, if I'm killed at work, what photo are they going to use of me?
Oh, my God. Shit. Like, she's eating a sandwich, really?
For me, it would probably be one of those stupid Photoshops I've done. Photoshopping my face over, like, Iron Man or something.
You're like, wow, Infinity Gauntlet, huh?
It's going to be that photo of me holding that rum barrel where I'm just like, ah!
Oh, there you go, there you go. That's it. That's it right there.
Oh, man, so good.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, honestly, mine are the same as you guys. Like, yeah. It's like a fundamental movie in, like, my childhood, mm-hmm. which I probably shouldn't have watched at 9, but you know what? We didn't give a shit, all right? Mm. Again, my mom was very pro-Latino movies, and she straight up was just like, no. Like, I'll make an exception for, you know,
we turned out all right.
Vampires. We turned out,
we're okay.
I mean, I'm the odd man out because my mom is white and had me watch it because she just didn't care.
Yeah, well.
And, you know what? As a kid, my favorite character actually was always the Harvey Keitel's character.
Yeah.
I was always, I liked his diplomacy. Because, like, even when George Clooney's, like, when he lost it and he would start, he'd be like, hey, you want us to not lose steam right here. Yeah. This is how we do it. And now I'm going to take a shot.
Yeah.
Like, he knew how to control the room.
Yeah.
Which, as a kid, I identified as like, fuck, that guy's the goddamn boss.
Yeah, he is.
Even though he's kind of the victim for a lot of the movie. He still runs the show
exactly.
Yeah.
He's pulling the puppet strings.
Soft power. Yeah. That's what it is. The soft power right there.
So Harvey Keitel, man. He's fucking great. Dude. He's fucking fantastic.
He's a wolf.
He's the wolf, dude. He's the goddamn wolf through and through.
You guys ever see Bad Lieutenant?
Yes.
Oh, what?
Oh, it's a great movie.
It's a great movie. Yeah, Bad Lieutenant. Check that out. Yeah. Great Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, it's a very great Harvey Keitel.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I got to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what? What elements of grindhouse cinema do you think From Dusk Till Dawn kind of exhibits here? And does it qualify as that double feature, as that review once said?
Well, I mean, obviously, these guys are, like, horror fans, and so was the special effects artist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's slight nods here to, like, George Romero and stuff like that, you know, Night of the Living Dead stuff, but they just made it super, like, 90s and, you know, in fucking Texas. And
it's
shit,
of its time,
you know?
For sure. Yeah,
it's like a Western fucking vampire flick, you know?
I wouldn't consider it a double feature. I don't think there's a... I've never considered it to be, like, such a turn.
Mm.
I just think it's, like, they're just a victim of happenstance that, they, you know, they're on the run from the law. They go to this meetup place, and then chaos ensues.
I'd say there's a tonal shift.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. That's for sure.
A big one.
I think there's a few, because, like, the scene in which we were talking about when the lady gets brutally murdered by...
Richie.
Yeah.
That right there changed the movie for me.
That was a big tone shift for me too.
Yeah, because I was like, even, you know, I was a kid and I was like, I didn't really get what was going on. Then you get older and you watch it and I was like, yeah, that's such
a
fucking
dark
scene.
It's so dark. It's very dark.
Because like, you're just like, oh, these dudes robbed a bank, they got out of prison, they're on the run. And then you're like, okay, so this is what this movie is going to start off with or whatever. And then it goes to like... serial killer movie.
Yeah, that's
right there. Like, it didn't dawn on me, even when, like, the ladies reporting about their death count, it didn't dawn on me that these guys are serial killers, essentially.
Also,
but in that moment when that scene happens, I'm like, oh, fuck. These guys are twisted.
Yeah.
This is a serial killer movie, too.
Also, the way it's shot, too, because there's, like, Rodriguez slowly closes in on George Clooney.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, oh, we're focused
on his
emotions.
And his stammered dialogue, too, and he's like, this isn't what we are. Yeah. He's like, and then he grabs
he's like, what is
the
wrong
fuck,
with you?
What is wrong
he's
with
like,
you?
What the is wrong with you? Yeah. Is it me? Or, like, he's like, dude, it's like a serious scene.
Yeah, and on that, like, the whole, like, you reap what you sow kind of thing, because they are serial killers, for them to end up in a... vampire den, like, that's what you get.
Yeah.
Like, you kill all these fucking people.
At the end of the day, you're a shitty fucking person. Yeah. But we still like you because, you know, this is the world we're in right now, you know?
I mean, essentially, well, this is going to be kind of, like, messed up, but, you know, Seth is essentially a kind of an anti-hero in a sense.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I totally agree. Because I wouldn't view Seth as really a serial killer. I would view Richie as a serial killer.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, 100%.
Richie for sure. But Seth is like the moral compass that keeps Richie in line for a lot of people.
Right, yeah. Or he tries.
I agree with that.
At least he tries. The second he leaves him unsupervised, he does that shit.
Right. And then even like the whole like put your bid in, he has a freaking retainer. It's such a small moment that like lets you go. Like,
well,
he's still level level-headed at least a little bit.
There's a couple moments where, mm-hmm. like, truly, like, fraternal moments between them where I really appreciated. And you could tell that, that Seth always looked out for Richie. I really appreciated those moments. Even when, like, Richie, like, is, like, dying, Seth still gives, like, cares mm-hmm. immensely. It's very interesting. Like,
he has a love for his little brother, for sure.
Even if he's exhibited a fucking freak.
Also, not to mention that I think he's named Richie after Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. Uh-huh. I'm assuming, because Richard Ramirez was also
pretty prominent around that time.
Maybe. He was big at the time.
And there's one small, like, true nugget of life that's delivered by Seth, and it's not a big problem until you make it one. Mm-hmm. And I love that line. I've always been like, that's such a smart, like, little rule. Like, there you go. That's how you should treat life.
Well, I think it's a good example of the character. He's very level-headed, but he's also, at the end of the day, like, they are a product of their upbringing. They're both mm-hmm. criminals, obviously, for their own sake. Mm-hmm. But he's able to make it work and manage them as kind of a duo, where Richie is, like, id. Like straight in.
Right, or like that scene when they're in the bathroom is like a great example of that, where like the second he gets like rolled, it's like Marty McFly, like, did you just call me a chicken?
Yeah.
Very
then,
much like
and then
that.
He just has to like knock him out.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was breaking you out of prison. Was that me being a fucking nut?
You just fell. I don't know what happened. You just fell. It's really weird.
Yeah. He's like, what? He's like, you hit your head in the toilet. I was really worried.
Oh, Seth, these are my fucking clothes.
This is my only fucking pair.
We'll get you new ones in Mexico.
Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, like some pharmacy out there is going to have my prescription.
It's Mexico. They have everything. It'll be fine.
Oh, I love it. All right, so I'm going to skip this one. I'm going to the next one. So Cheech Marin is prominently featured, of course, in From Dusk Till Dawn. But he was also a major part of Mexican-American households in the late 80s and early 90s. Mm-hmm. So as one of the breakout Chicano actors of his time, of all time, really, mm-hmm. how do you feel about his impact and presence in Hollywood during this era? And has that any impact on you guys growing up?
I mean, he was a hot ticket back then. Yeah. And you know, and like, shout out to him right now because he's opening the Cheech Marin Art Museum in Riverside, too.
I think it's already open.
Is it open already?
Yeah, so I like badly want to check that out.
So he's been a purveyor and collector of Chicano art for a mm-hmm. long, long time.
Yeah.
And this entire gallery in downtown Riverside is all of his art that he's collected, but it's all Chicano-based.
Yep.
All Chicano artists.
I love that he's doing it in Riverside, too.
A very admirable thing about him, too, is that he's always giving back to the culture. You know, he is like an icon in the community and in the culture, but like, what cool thing is that, you know, he never really like sold out, I guess you could say.
No, he never did.
You know, like, and, you know, he kept doing his thing, you know, and he gave back, too, which is really cool.
I mean,
and,
I do love that he didn't look like a movie star, either. Mm, like, no. He wasn't some guy that Hollywood's like, hey, you're going to be the lead. He was I'm going to be me, and me sells.
Well, not only that, but I mean, like, you know, Cheech and Chong, that was his big thing, too. But then he was always having these random little small roles in everybody else's movies.
Yeah.
And he always did it with such poise.
Yeah. He did, like, poise. I think I agree with that 100%.
And he's just like, yeah, exactly. He's saying he's him all the time. He's like, yeah, like, he's the fucking I was just watching Once Upon a Time in Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and he's the guy in the beginning with the eye patch, and it's such a small stupid role, but it's just Cheech Marin going, yeah, I'm just gonna do that, and I'm gonna do it to the best of its ability.
That's right.
The museum is set to open on May 8th, 2022.
Oh, I thought it was already open.
Okay. It's coming up. So
it's coming up,
but
it is
set to open. It's own like permanent museum.
In downtown Riverside.
Yeah. I know it's been in the works for a while. Yeah,
I had already thought that it was going to open this year, but they might have pushed it because of COVID.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's always been such a, like, an example of, like, what you can do by staying true to yourself.
Yeah.
He did Born in East L.A. Yeah. Like, and it's one of those things, it's a story he wants to tell.
Yeah.
And with Cheech and Chong, like, the only reason they split was because he wanted to expand his storytelling beyond the stoner comedy, which kind of failed with the Crustacean Brothers. I forgot what it was.
The Crescent Cane Brothers?
The Crescent Cane Brothers, that's right. fucking James listening right now. But, like, even then, he gave back, and he was, like, well, I'm still going to be me in Spy Kids. Yeah. I'm still going to be me in everything else. And he's one of the most admirable actors. I don't think gets as much credit as he should.
My first experience with Cheech was in
Spy Kids.
I mean,
that's the thing.
Well,
though.
Again, let's
generational difference.
Like, I was sheltered.
But like even his presence in that aspect, like, it makes a huge impact. It makes a big difference because and he still brings his Chicano self to the forefront no matter what role it is, and he fits.
Okay,
which is why I admire
him. I just also love that's like I have to bring this up because Spy Kids, directed by Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, which is also Robert Rodriguez.
Right.
Yeah,
has like Antonio Banderas.
Yeah.
Fucking Machete.
That's right.
Like
that's
Machete.
Danny Trejo.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
Not even Danny Trejo playing a different character. It's Machete.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I really appreciate about that small group of creators is that they all trust fucking Robert Rodriguez in whatever genre they take.
Intrinsically.
Yeah,
yes.
It's like, oh, whatever Robert Rodriguez is going to do, if he asks me to be a part of it, I'm going to go with no hesitation. I don't care if it's a fucking action movie with Antonio Banderas, or a fucking horror movie with Quentin Tarantino, or a fucking all CGI kids, Spy Kids thing. Like, if he asks me, I'm going to fucking do it. And, like, that's the thing. They got full trust on Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And then, like, not a lot of filmmakers have that little click.
Helps that he's a goddamn good filmmaker.
Yeah.
He is awesome. Good.
Again, way off topic here, but I don't know if you watched the Chef movie with Jon Favreau.
Yes.
Okay, so did you watch the Chef show?
No.
They made an entire cooking show. It was him and Roy Choi together making a lot of the food from the show, and then they go and travel and talk to other people, and they go to Robert Rodriguez's house.
Oh.
And he has a pizza oven, a brick oven, or whatever.
Yep.
Wood, stone, whatever.
Oven. Yeah, yeah.
And he makes pizza, and I'm like, God damn. I'm like, I bet he makes the best pizza.
No, Rodriguez is actually a cook. I know this for a fact because in the Once Upon a Time in Mexico DVD special features, he would have a 10-minute cooking show. And I remember
you're making Alex lose it right now.
He said, okay, in Once Upon a Time in Mexico, we make puerco pibil, cochinita pibil, and that's what Johnny Depp eats in the movie, right? So in the special features, Robert Rodriguez is like, so on this little 10-minute show, the little special feature bonus for the DVD, we're gonna make that meal.
Mm.
And he's like, but it's really important for you to know how to cook. And then he goes, looks into the camera, and goes, because not knowing how to cook is like not knowing how to fuck. And I'm like, and after watching Rodriguez. I was like 17 when I first saw that. I was like, I'm gonna make sure I cook my own meals. I was like, I gotta learn. So he does, and then like in DVDs, I don't know if he does it in this digital age now, but in physical media days, he would always have like a little 10-minute cooking special for the special features for all of his movies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he's doing it now, but yeah, he always did.
So
your
that
dedication
oddly
to the special features.
Yeah. So on that note, I want to add one that's gonna make him proud. So there is a deleted scene that I watched some time ago. The part where Harvey Keitel, they all line up, and they line up with the four vampire ladies. There's one that has a stomach open.
Yes, I know exactly the scene.
There's a deleted scene where during that vampire's function, the stomach, it eats people. Mm-hmm. And so she lifts a guy up and feeds on it.
Yeah.
It's really cool, but it's a deleted scene. I know, and it's such a cool scene.
Tarantino actually was the one that wanted that cut.
Nah.
He was like, listen, I know it's violent, but that's too much. That's
too much.
It's pretty bad.
Also, he didn't want the liquor straight through the feet to the mouth.
Okay, you cannot cut any of Salma, okay?
That's blasphemy right there.
That is blasphemy. All right.
You know what? We're just going to go into the fun questions now.
Okay.
So now we're going fun time. This is 149. All right? So we got to have some good time
here. I can't wait for fun time.
Fun time is
why
here.
Why don't you say it like that?
Fun time is here.
Oh, God.
No, you say it like that either.
All right.
No, please don't say it like that ever again.
Cheech.
I know you guys want to have fun.
Fun time is here.
No, when you say it either.
Cheech Marin's Chet Pussy is now out of a job and has to detail the pussy selection of various venues. I have a list on my phone of these venues. Please just tell me, what type of pussy is available?
Oh my God. What is this?
We'll do a practice round.
What
the hell? I want you to do the best impression of Cheech Marin right now. Phil, you're going to lead us. What kind of pussy is available at Costco? Go.
Well-packaged pussy.
James.
Oh, I got
wait, one. I'm doing this?
This
yeah,
is fun.
It's Costco?
We're all doing
no,
it.
No.
He's going to name a store and you tell
us. No. We're all doing one round each. Costco.
I have mine. Don't take mine.
Costco. I'm going to probably take it. We got both pussy.
Alex, I'll go last because I know them all.
I got another one.
We got sample pussy. Yes! Yes! Yes!
We got Kirkland pussy.
Wow. This is good.
Hey!
By the way, I was like, free sample.
This is fun time. This
next
fun
venue,
time.
Next venue. Phil, you're kicking off again. Disneyland.
Oh my god.
We got happy pussy.
No.
We got Juro pussy.
We got Ariel's grota pussy.
Oh, oh my man. God. We got pirate pussy.
This is fun.
I got four more.
Let's go.
Phil, no, we're starting with Alex.
Oh, no. Please,
no.
The DMV.
Oh, no. Okay, we got old pussy.
God damn it. Oh, shit.
DMV, that's a good one.
I don't know.
Phil, go. It's improv, baby. Yeah, let's fucking go.
We got boring. What did you say, boring?
I said old.
We got boring pussy.
James?
I was gonna say one that's not okay.
Do it.
We got underage driver.
Oh my god,
that's way worse because I was Jesus. We got late registration.
Oh, this is fun time.
Oh,
good.
James.
Oh god.
No, you know what? James is doing the next two. Alex, you're gonna start this one off for sure.
Oh,
this is for Webster specifically.
Oh fuck. Okay.
Comic Con.
Oh my god.
Oh no.
What kind of pussy is available at Comic Con?
I know, I got mine already.
Oh no. Oh fuck. We got latex pussy.
We got smelly pussy.
See, I was gonna say that, but it was in the movie. Dude,
I know, but yeah. I had to jump on that one too. We got massive body odor pussy.
We got early premiere pussy.
Early premiere pussy. We got all age pussy.
All age pussy.
Oh, I love it.
We got VIP pussy.
We have exhibit hall pussy.
We got movie prop pussy.
We got breaking news pussy. Oh my god.
We got Kevin Feige pussy.
We got Jim Lee pussy.
Oh, all right, we got two more. James, oh, all right, what kind of pussy are you going to get at Denny's?
What the fuck is up, Denny's?
We got throwing up at 3 a.m. pussy.
I got
mine.
We got late night pussy.
Alex.
We got tequila drunk pussy.
We got grand slam pussy.
We got moons over Miami pussy.
That's what I'm fucking. I was waiting for that one right
we
there.
We got five stack pussy.
We got build your own grand slam pussy.
Build your own pussy. We got build your own pussy.
We got pissed off waitress pussy.
We got underpaid pussy.
We got understaffed and overworked pussy.
Oh, that's good. Oh, And whoever wants it, Republican Party headquarters.
Oh my god. We got conservative pussy.
We got mummy pussy. Oh god.
Oh bro, we got.
We got my body, my choice pussy.
Bro, right here, Mitt Romney. We got binders full of pussy.
I can't top that. Bro, I can't top that.
We got binders.
I can't top that. Okay, I'm gonna let it end right there.
We got storming the Capitol pussy.
We got January 6th pussy.
Oh, Jesus.
We got stop the steal pussy.
We got true patriot pussy. Oh.
We got Second Amendment pussy.
We got back the blue pussy. Back the blue.
We got Blue Lives Matter pussy.
We got stop the steal pussy.
That was a
we got stand your ground pussy.
Oh my god.
Imagine your neighbors right now, they're like, what the hell?
What the fuck is going on?
The cops are gonna show up in like 2 seconds. Like,
oh.
Anthony, that was the best segment.
That was really fun.
I've never been so engaged in this podcast ever.
We still got a couple more. It's game time, baby.
So good.
Very good. I'm very impressed over here.
Now, the four of us, we find ourselves in the Titty Twister Bar at the same night as our lovable band of characters.
Okay.
How does this play out with each of us? And how long do we last?
I'm gonna get to fuck Seth Gecko.
I'm gonna start this one off.
Go for it.
I'm tequila drunk in the private room with one of the women. She's going down on me. She turns into a vampire, bites my dick off. I'm dead instantly.
Getting your dick bitten off doesn't kill you instantly.
Yeah, but she's gonna probably feed on me at that point too.
So I'm a major vein that's gonna
bleed the artery, and then I'm
just like, keep sucking, just go.
I'm like, oh, yeah. I was like, oh, I was almost there.
Well, in the movie, Selma Hayek tells George Clooney that you'll be my slave dog. So I'm most likely
you're gonna be Spud.
Spot. I think it was Spot.
I thought it was Spot.
So yeah, I'll be Selma Hayek's slave dog.
You'll be
Spot.
Selma Hayek's willing slave.
Yeah,
Phil is in the back. I'll be Spot.
Yep.
Pick He's me, not gonna be Spot. I'll be Spot.
I'll be Spot. I'll be the best Spot you've ever had in your fucking life, Selma.
To talk about my woman.
You just sat in the back with one of the other ones.
Yeah, you had the chance.
Just
you had your chance and you fucking missed.
And it's probably the stomach opening woman too.
She just goes like, "Mom,
I don't know."
Jesus! All I know is like I somehow make it into the back room that they're talking about, and I horribly fashion my cross. It is like just an X. So I walk out first, and they just take me out. Yeah. Like, I'm done.
I was like, anybody else think that he's probably one of the first to get bitten whenever he
gets out? When the shit barely goes down?
I get killed by a normal person.
Bar patron number six.
He's so drunk, he's ignoring it, and he's standing at the bar trying to order another drink.
I'm like, what is the shot? Where is the shot?
And then done.
Alex? That's it.
My thought process ended trying to fuck Seth Gecko.
It's like, Mr. Clooney, I know there's like a bunch of vampires here, but we might just die. Can I just fuck you real fast?
I like that you think that's the extent of my game.
That's pretty much what he thinks that your game is.
No, Alex is like, give me the snake. Give me the fucking snake.
Let's just, this is our last night here. Let's just fucking do it, George.
George! No, I pull the Independence Day, like, this could be her last night on Earth.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to die a virgin.
I'm immediately going up to Selma Hayek and go, look, I will kill everybody in this fucking bar right now for like 5 seconds with you.
How we're all just like, I would love to fuck someone
in the bar, yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Trejo?
in reality, I'm drunk and I'm like moshing by the band.
Oh yeah,
and they blow up and I blow up with
you. Blow up with I can see that 100%.
I'm like, oh yeah, boom.
The show's over.
Fuck you, good night.
Fuck you, good night.
No, realistically, I don't know how long I would last, but I mean, as many people of our age, I mean, I think we've all thought about the zombie apocalypse, the vampire apocalypse.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't be in a place like that without knowing that it was a vampire sanctuary, without getting absolutely shit-faced drunk and partying my ass off, so I would not survive long at all.
I mean, dude, you're not like in Mexico, there's like boobies flying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's the Wild West, literally.
A Wild West bar.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm seeing double four titties.
Exactly. go ahead, Alex. My bad.
No, it's fine. I honestly don't know. I would like to, I mean, I think I would die quickly, but I would like to think I would have the same humph as Juliette Lewis's character, where I'm just like, come on!
Yeah. I'm the one getting eaten. I'm like, kill me. Alex is like, enough bullets. You know? I gotta get out of here too.
Yeah. I love how in that scene too.
I'd kill you.
I love how in that scene too, when the bro's like, kill me, he's like, fuck it. She shoots him and they all explode with one fucking bullet. They all just explode.
He was covered with holy water balloons, condom balloons.
I guess.
It makes sense.
The condom balloons were just chef's kiss. Right? It's delightful.
The super soaker for me, because I was like, that's like our 90s right there.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Mm-hmm. So it's 149 years from now. That's right.
What?
Oh, no.
Or the 149th year from now. 2170, and medical science has allowed us to live an absurdly long time. What movies is the Horrible People's Podcast still covering, and what are we doing in our elderly lives at this point in time?
Halloween 5.
The Redux.
Yes, and that's our answer.
Oh, Phil.
Alex's face is
Oh, Phil. I love it. He's still going to hold... For a century and a half, he's going to hold on to that shit. That's perfect.
150 years of Halloween, dude. Mm-hmm. You are
Halloween,
fucking on
Halloween
one.
Halloween 5.
You are on one.
James, we're recovering. We're recovering 149 years from now.
Event Horizon 4... Daddy's home.
I am home.
You smell like Event Horizon. I am Event Horizon.
I think in 150 years, we will finally cover Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, God, Alex, no.
In 150 years?
Oh, fine. We might get enough reviews by
Thanksgiving 540.
Thanksgiving. There you go.
Trash month.
And from still, James will forever be endorsing it.
Trash.
They will still not have the rights done yet for Friday the 13th. So we are going to finally make it to Freddy vs. Jason. It will happen at that point.
Yeah, right. I want to do the one before that.
Oh, let's do it. I missed it on accident. So it's been 149 episodes of hilarity here on the Horrible People's Podcast. So in one word, four words. Or 9 words. Mm-hmm. Please describe your favorite episode of the podcast so far that you have, of course, participated in.
Oh.
So I have mine because I read ahead of time.
Bring it up.
It's the only other episode where I've laughed as hard as I have tonight.
Okay.
And it's, David, why did you send my mother to Atlanta?
Yes.
9 words.
Dead. Oh, I love that.
By the way, my girlfriend won't stop doing that now. Randomly, I'll just be sitting there, she'll go, David!
David!
Oh my god!
Forget my brother. Forget my lawyer.
Honestly, that's my answer too. ID4, surprisingly, it was fucking one of my favorite. It was fucking amazing, and not because James was in it, because I was in it. But you know, James, you know, he had a nice little touch to it too.
Only enhancing. My favorite episode was actually when we did N4L back in the day, Resident Evil 1.5, which is one of our most unique stories that we've ever told.
That was fun.
I love it, and I will only say in my Video Game of Thrones voice with one word, Bioflames!
Nice.
James?
Shit, man. I'm trying to remember all the episodes I've been on.
You've been on a lot.
I've been on quite a few.
I think you're the most, but Phil's pretty closely behind you.
Yeah. If not surpassing at this point, which is what I'm
it's all right.
While you're thinking of that, I do want to give an honorable mention to episode like 3 Poughkeepsie. No, the 3 is Omen.
4 is Poughkeepsie Tapes.
Yeah, yes. The Poughkeepsie Tapes. I re-listened to that recently, and I'm like, aww.
We were golden in that one, weren't we?
Yeah,
that's what we learned. Good. That's what we learned our
that's
footing.
That's what we
right
learned.
There.
Like it was our true. Like we were just like, this is the secret sauce. Because the episode before that is when we did the Omen, and it was 2.5 hours long, and we were like, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, we nailed it. With that one, I think that's when the format like there were from there on. Nice. Yeah, and it's also our most popular episode, next to Scooby Doo and Zombie Island.
That's right.
Oh yeah,
beautiful. No, you guys are golden in every episode.
Oh, thank you.
We are not, but thank you,
James.
Especially on the ones where I'm on. But,
okay,
you know,
shut up.
Okay, my favorite has been the Treehouse of Horror.
That's right, episode 100.
In my 9 words, Dad, you killed Flanders, what's the line? Fuck, I fucked it up.
Dad, you killed Zombie Flanders.
Dad, you killed Zombie Flanders. He was a zombie.
There we go.
That might not be 9, but anyway, yeah.
I love it.
Dad, you killed Zombie Flanders.
He was a zombie? All right, well.
Oh, that is exactly 9.
Oh, there you go.
I was trying to do it in my head. I was like,
wait.
You got one more, Bill? You got one more?
Well, I mean, my one word for the ID4 one would be die, because I think James's metal idea that he had was really cool when the president goes, what is you want us to do? And the alien goes, die. To this day, James, I really hope you do that someday.
Yes.
Start a metal band.
Fucking do it.
The sad part about it was we already had that squared away and lined up for our demo when I was in a death metal band, but then we broke up and didn't do it.
He brought it up at Halloween Horror Night.
That's right. It was because I had my 94 shirt. As soon as you mentioned that, it's been stuck in my head.
And like, I think about it too for 99 because it would be so sick. Yeah.
Right? I was like, dude, that would be a really cool intro song. Intro for a metal song.
One day.
We'll make it.
There you go.
Anyway.
On this day. What? Oh, what are you?
Wait, I was letting you, but...
Honorable mention, today's episode, four words, cavalcade of tits, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
So,
Salma Hayek's hot bod. That's it.
It's got plenty of words.
That's what I call a fucking show.
Not enough words.
Who cares? It's my podcast.
I make the rules here.
It's my house, bitch.
Every week. With that, guys, what would you rate From Dusk Till Dawn out of 5 Salma Hayek snake dances?
Out of 5 Salma Hayek snake dances.
Hayek.
Yeah, nice typo.
One typo, the last fucking line. Last line.
No, there's been a few typos.
There was a few, and I showed forgiveness.
Thank you.
You said, instead of Tarantino, you said Tarantino. Like uncle. Like my Terran uncle. Tarantino.
Like Tapatio.
No, there was a typo where I was like, I'm gonna keep my
Let
mouth.
It go. Let it run.
Okay, would you rate From Dusk Till Dawn out of 5 Salma Hayek snake dances?
Yes.
Dang, you wanna go first?
Are we all in a consensus here?
It's gonna be a 5 for me. Just
I'm a 5. Yeah. I'm a fucking 5.
I'm a 5.
We're yeah. 5. 5 stars.
Is this the first time we've had like this large of a group and we've all been in a consensus?
I think so.
Actually, no. I think also Independence Day, we're all just like, it's fucking amazing.
I think I gave it like
a hair below.
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
But this, yeah, From Dusk Till Dawn is just that movie.
From Dusk Till Dawn was like, as a teenager watching this, that's one of the first movies where I realized this movie's pretty self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just fucking around having fun right here.
Yes.
And that was like the first movie where I was like, oh, they meant to do it like this.
Yes, there was intention behind
every
movement.
That was one of the first movies when I really started getting into movies. Like Tarantino was like one of the first filmmakers I started following, and then I started watching From Dusk Till Dawn. I was like, oh, they meant to intentionally make it this fun.
Yes,
and that's
great.
That's why I give it so much credit.
Yeah, on that same note, like I said, it just the entirety of the morality of the vampire and all that, just they give zero fucks about that.
That's right.
And it's like they want to kill everybody and everything in sight because they want to feed, and that's what it is.
Yo,
survive.
Evil vampires, right there. Kill them. Or you be killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you be killed. So eloquent.
Yep. This movie has so much to offer. Like, every frame is almost good, and honestly, it's a ride the whole way through.
Yeah.
I gave it 5 out of 5 cock guns.
There you go.
That's also very good. Okay.
5 out of 5 fuck you good nights.
All right. That is From Dusk Till Dawn from 1996. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Thank you so much, Phil and James, for joining us for our 149th episode.
That's fuck you.
149, baby. 149.
Because we can't fucking count.
All right, I can't talk.
We all
agree to it. It's fine.
None of us are perfect. Okay, so next week, we are talking about a franchise.
That's right.
That we are slowly running out of content for, but that's okay. That is a problem for another year.
We only do one a season. We're good.
We're very excited to talk about this remake.
That's right, a remake too.
So it'll be quite fun, and it will be our 150th episode, so we hope you will join us for that. In the meantime, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you liked what you heard, I hope you will rate and subscribe wherever you are listening, especially if you are on iTunes. That does help other people find the podcast. And if you think we deserve a couple bucks for what we're doing, we do have a Patreon. You can find us on patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod. And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod. And we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. And if you want to follow Anthony, he is on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And you can find me, Alex, on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. I'm going to go in order. Phil.
Ghost
plug
coffee
your
shop.
Shit.
Yeah, quick question. Where did you come up with Ghost Coffee Shop? I've always been intrigued. Always liked that.
So when I was in high school, my username for everything was Blonde Dictionary because I was blonde and my last name was Webster.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I was like, okay.
And then I wasn't blonde anymore and I was like, I have to come up with something wittier. I like ghosts and I drink a lot of coffee. So
beautiful.
Ghost Coffee Shop.
Beautiful. Nice.
There's no real rhyme or reason.
I like it. Yeah. I've always thought that was a really cool
thank
username.
Thank you. I've gotten many compliments on it, but now it's my...
I'm going to use that as my next short, probably. So.
Hey, I like it.
I'm going to ask you for permission.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Fuck yeah. So, Phil, plug your shit.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter, Phil_Acevedo. I'm currently, right now, just slobbering all over Dune and Michael Keaton Batman.
That's right.
And you can find me also on Instagram, Phil_Acevedo. And I got a short film called Render Program. Go check it out. And thanks.
All thanks, right. Phil.
Yeah.
James?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Sex Machine Cotgun. I'm just kidding. You can follow me on Instagram if you want, The Mighty Monarch, the_mighty_monarch. Sometimes I post all of the random published articles that I write and it's a bunch of other random shit. There you go.
Hey,
cool. And then, I had brought it up last week. So sometime this month, we will be relaunching our N4L gaming podcast.
Yeah, that's what I'm fucking waiting for right there. Right. Hell yeah.
Cool
shit.
That's what
I'm talking about.
All right.
So in the meantime, if you do wander into Mexico and see a cool flaming bar called the Titty Twister, check it out.
Ask what kind of pussy is available.
Yeah,
it'll be a little different from Costco. A little different.
Yeah. Get a lap dance.
Go get that free sample pussy.
There you go. All right, bye guys.
See ya
later. Woo!